You're listening to Right Back Atcha, the 2000s pop music podcast with Joel and David, where we take pop music seriously. It is so weird that I'm saying it rather than you, Joel. Like, I had to just channel what it is that you would normally say in the beginning.
Oh my God, Freaky Friday situations happened right there. Hello, David. Happy New Year. How are you doing?
Happy New Year, JB. Yes, doing very well. And you?
I am doing well, thank you. I am ready for 2023. Lots going on, but what I'm most excited about is our year ahead, having fun on the podcast. Hopefully lots and lots of great fun episodes for us and our listeners, maybe some guests and some exciting things along the way. I am ready for 2023 with big young diva energy.
Energy. Yes, absolutely. Listen, guys, thanks so much for your support all of 2022. This episode, as you can probably tell by the heading, is a little different for us. We've never done an episode like this before, but it's fun to try new things. And you know what? We absolutely adore these two guests that we've got on this episode. We actually recorded this sometime last year. These are some great moments in 2002, we're jumping in the time machine and going all the way back and having a chat with our friends, Adam Eve and Miss Eliza Day from This Is Disco podcast.
Now, these icons were at the top of our list when we wanted to do an episode like this. So I'm so thrilled that it's finally coming out and that everyone's going to get to listen to it. I was thrilled that I got to listen to it again. David, you did an amazing job in the edit. I completely forgot everything we spoke about. So it was like hearing it and experiencing it for the first time, which was fab. So the format of this episode is it's a more of a fun roundtable conversation. It's less in depth than we usually have, but we all wanted to pick two songs from the year 2002. A few of us have a few pop culture honorable mentions from the year as well, and we just have a good fun celebratory chat about it and taking us back to that incredible year. And hopefully you guys have as much fun listening to it as we did recording it. Real highlight of the last year for me, Davo.
It's so much fun. And do you know what? It really is like a time capsule thing, because all of us have such distinct memories at different times and ages in our lives in 2002. So it's really very nice to just hear like where people were at that time and how these pop songs and these moments really have just resonated with us. So I hope you guys really enjoy this. If you do, show it lots of love, and we may do more and have. Yeah, actually, do you know what? If you really like this format, tell us who we should have on next time.
Yes, let us know at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can leave us a lovely 5-star review, hit that subscribe button, tell your friend, and make sure you follow the guys at This Is Disco and head to their profile. Follow that podcast if you're not already, and you'll find Adam and Eliza's separate socials on there too. And I also just quickly want to say, one of my choices, we recorded this before a certain picture went round featuring that artist. And since then, I do mention that I basically did listen to that song every day. I have taken it out of my daily circulation on this occasion. So do bear that in mind when we get to that. And I think with this artist particular, even though I have paused listening to them for the moment, I think we can live in a world where maybe we separate on this occasion the music from the artist, especially because they don't celebrate it or do much with it these days. So maybe us as the pop community can embrace it and take it for ourselves. But just take that whole section with a pinch of salt and we'll see what happens in the future. And I just want to wish our listeners an incredible year ahead. Thank you so much for your love and support. We can't wait to do so much more pop fun for you this year.
Happy New Year, everyone. Shall we get in the time machine, JB?
Let's strap on in and head to 2002.
Yeah. I'm so excited about this special, JB. We've never done anything like this before, have we?
We've never done anything like this at all. You know, look, I think we've been wanting to do guests for such a long time, beyond like linear guest interviews, which we absolutely love doing when they happen. But it feels like we're part of this fabulous pop community and we all talk with them all the time online. And we wanted to bring this onto our pod. And as listeners of the podcast would know, our regular episodes are so in depth that I think it would be part fabulous, but part torture to put anyone through the process of our episodes. I don't think people have 6 hours to spare. So we thought we'd try something a little bit different in a way that we can get people on to have a good, fun pop chat. I mean, on that note, shall I introduce our lovely guest?
Oh, please do. I mean, not since we had Katie Underwood and Belinda from Bardo that we've had more iconic Aussie duo on this show.
Oh, right? My God. Right. Exactly. I mean, look, we have equally as iconic as Cabell. Today, we are joined by quite possibly two of the nicest people in podcasting, and they are as equally brilliant as they are lovely. It's the co-hosts of This Is Disco, Adam Eve and Eliza Day. Hello and welcome to the show. How are you going?
Oh, hello.
Very overwhelmed by that fabulous introduction, and I'm blushing and trying to think.
What a bloody intro.
Very honoured to be here.
Very much so.
Oh, bless you. Well, we are honoured to have you. I mean, as we were saying just before we started recording, it feels like I know you both so, so well. So, I mean, it's more of an excuse just to actually know you both so, so well and have fun and record and talk about pop music.
We should have had champers, amazing, but didn't plan that properly. You guys could have had mimosas and...
I know.
Next time.
We'll get the organic Kylie Carver going.
Oh, my God,
time.
Yes.
So, we don't have the Carver here.
We'll find a way to give it to you.
Absolutely so wrong. It's criminal. Like, when I was back in Australia, I was just appalled that I couldn't find Kylie wine anywhere. And also, when I went to Dan Murphy's, the guy was like, Kylie... And, like, gave me a blank face. I'm like, as in Minogue, as in National Treasure.
Right.
Sorry, for the UK audience and myself, what is Dan Murphy's?
Dan Murphy's.
Oh, it's a liquor store. It's a liquor store. It's like a huge warehouse-type liquor store.
Were they like, oh, Kylie? Nah, we don't have anything like that here.
Nah, mate.
I had to find it in Geelong at a boutique bottle shop. So it was run by this Eastern European man and this little old man. And I remember walking in and I was like, excuse me, do you have Kylie wine? He's like, yes, yes, yes. And he's hobbling over to take me to the fridge. He's like, it is all here. You take. So I was very happy to.
Please tell the rest of the gay community, tell them to come here. Well, look, guys, for our lovely listeners, I'm sure they already know, but can you please tell them about your podcast, or in your case, Adam, podcasts?
So This Is Disco is a Danny and Kylie Minogue commentary podcast hosted by myself and Adam. Usually it's once a month we will go over one of the girls' albums, or sometimes we have one of them on if we're really, really lucky, which has only happened once. So.
And I mean, look, Eliza, you say only happened once, but that's 50% of the
of the Minogue.
Of the Minogue. Yeah. Well, I mean, Carol is also on our list, so.
And what about Brendan?
They're all
wrong.
They're all on the list. That's what we get up to. But Adam also has a bunch of other fabulous podcasts.
Yeah, so I have a fortnightly radio show on Mixcloud called The Record Doctor, which has been going now for like 5 years, I think, maybe more. Anyway, it's been going for a while. It used to be on FM radio, now it's on Mixcloud. I also host the Girls Aloud podcast, You Can't Mistake Their Anthology.
Well, quickly, do you want to just give us, shout out the social handles so everyone can hit follow on all those podcasts?
This Is Disco is very complicated, at This Is Disco. On Twitter and Instagram, that's it.
The Record Doctor is at The Record Doctor on both Twitter and Instagram. The Girls Aloud podcast is at Aloud Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. And Dr. Pop Pod. I was like, shit, what was that? Is just at Dr. Doc Pod.
Got two doctors on the show today.
Yes, yes, yes. The doctors are in. Oh, and I am just adem.ev on Instagram and the same on Twitter, but without the dot, because they wouldn't let me have that there.
Adam with an E is now my go-to way of writing Adam when I'm messaging other people called Adam. I have to correct myself. There are other ways of spelling it.
Oh, I love that.
For our listeners today, we are doing something a little bit different. We're taking it back to 2002. We've all picked two songs each, and there's going to be a few honourable mentions from 2002 along the way. 2002, Will Young was crowned the UK's very first pop idol. In America, Kelly won the first American Idol. Paul left S Club 7, and Down Under, Bardo split up.
This year is chaotic.
Chaotic. And the chaos continues with the internet's favourite wedding. Martin McCutcheon was Liza Minnelli's bridesmaid alongside podcast guest and Grammy Award winner Maya, which I'm still heartbroken that we didn't ask her about. But what a year, guys. So I think on that note, shall we kiss our way into 2002.
Mwah.
Mwah.
Right on cue. You guys are professionals.
We didn't even rehearse that beforehand.
So my first choice of the episode is Holly Valance, Kiss Kiss, because taking back to 2002, I couldn't not pick this song anyway, but to have three Aussies on the show, it was a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to this song almost every day. It's on my pump up bitch, let's go for it playlist when JB mode needs to be activated and I need to be there. Holly gets me there. So it is this fabulous, fabulous song. It wasn't a song that is an original to Holly. She wasn't writing it on set of Neighbours, just thinking, I'm waiting to get out there of Kiss Kiss.
Well, my history with it goes back to 97 when Tarkan's original Shimarık came out, because I have Turkish roots in my blood. And so the song was really, really quite popular particularly here in Melbourne, and it was getting played on a couple of radio stations that don't play international music as well, but they play really good pop music. So it had sort of started to get a little bit of a history here. I love the original, but obviously one of the things that I remember the most from the Holly version was that there was a chart battle at the time between this song and a certain other song that Eliza has actually picked for us to talk about later on in the episode.
Synergy. Wow. A real chart battle on Right Back At Ya.
Right.
Oh,
exactly.
My goodness.
Interestingly, the first artist that I'm actually bringing to the table a little later on covered the Shimarık 4 years before Holly would. The Serbian version is called Žene vole diamante, which is translated to Women Love Diamonds. Jelena Karleuša's version of this track, it was huge in Serbia and would actually also be the very first glimpse into her stepping away from traditional turbo folk to sort of do something a little more modern. It's definitely the one that I would rank the lowest of the three, but I still think that all three of them are great versions.
And just so I know, she released it as an official single, because I know you sent us a live performance, but it was a proper single, everything.
Well, the thing is, so in the Balkans, they'll do video clips to promote the album. Back then, particularly, there wasn't so much of a focus on singles. Now that streaming is a big deal, there is a much bigger focus on singles. But back then it was like, release the album, make some video clips for a couple of the single-worthy songs, but then just have them sort of out there. So there's no actual, like, I don't have any chart history on Yelena's run, because it was just sort of like numbers of how much the album had sold. So it's a little bit more sketchier in the Balkans, the music business, let's just put it that way. And I'll explain more a bit later.
Well, I was actually in Europe and the UK for the second half of 2002. So my whole music experience, you know, for a lot of that year, like we left, I think, July 2002, and then I wasn't back until January the following year. So a lot of my music that year is a lot of German pop.
Amazing.
But also this song was everywhere. Like, it's on my, I've got my 2002, you know, travel memories playlist, and that's on there.
Honestly, Adam, if it weren't for you mentioning, I hope I'm saying her name right, Yelena, is that right?
Yelena.
I got onto Wikipedia page and there's so many different like language versions of this song. We're not just talking like, you know, Middle Eastern language or European language. There's even like Cantonese versions, like a Korean artist covered it. Like, talk about a real global appeal of this song. So whoever has like the writing credit, like the bass writing credit, ka-ching in every dollar in the world.
A killing, yeah.
Absolutely fabulous. As I often say to David, during our chart battles and our friendship is almost cracking, I say, what about us? What about us, David? So, David, can you please tell us your first choice of today?
So I have picked Brandy's What About Us. Brandy's one of my favorite artists of all time. Full Moon is one of the most important albums, not just of my teen years, but also just like life in general. To me, this was such a game changer. Like, I had never heard a song like this before. You know, it was futuristic electro R&B. It was produced by Darkchild, who we know from The Boy Is Mine.
Icon.
Icon, right? Yeah. Mm. Whitney's It's Not Right, But It's Okay. Toni Braxton, He Wasn't Man Enough For Me. Like, so many hits, but this sounded like nothing he had ever done before. What about us to me? What about us to me? What about things that you said? Promises that you made, lies that you gave, things you told me, things that you said.
This is the greatest Brandy song of all time. For me, at least, I go to this song so, so much. It's just one of those timeless tracks that hasn't lost any of its power over the years. This was one that I used to love hearing in the R&B room on a Saturday night at Lyric Nightclub here in Geelong. I've got a lot of time for this song. Just everything about it is just, oh, perfection.
Miss Eliza Day, are you a Brandy fan? Are you an R&B fan? Apart from Red Blooded Woman.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Red Blooded Woman is, you know, the invention of R&B. I'm not a Brandy fan, but, like, I enjoy her, and I enjoy that she was swinging baseball bats around long before Beyoncé was in Hold Up. So I feel like that was probably Beyoncé's reference point, to be perfectly honest. Yeah, look, I tend to be more music video focused. Like, I love all the visuals and stuff. So those are usually the things that I remember. Something happened at the start of the 2000s where it was like, right, we are in the future. It's we're here. So every music video, it's like, okay, green screen and let's go futuristic. Like, they're all kind of the same. Like, you think, you know, Kylie's Can't Get You Out of My Head. It's the same aesthetic.
It's really brilliant, isn't it? I have a YouTube playlist called like Futuristic Y2K or something. And because of this time where you would turn on video hits and everyone was just not giving you realism. Like, realism is so overrated. We're giving you fantasy. We are giving you like, we're singing inside a metal tin or whatever, a spaceship. Yeah. It was insane. And actually, speaking of the video, this was my first entry into the song. I remember turning on video hits and seeing it. And also I was like, is that really Brandy? Because we're so used to her with her signature braids. But here she is, straightened hair. She is dancing on top of a human pyramid. This looks insane.
Do you know what I love about it? Is that it sits perfectly in pop and R&B in a way that it can be so like mainstream and successful in it, but also sounds very different to sort of anything else you probably would have seen in pop and R&B at the time. Yeah. It's sort of like static, like jaggedy, but it's fantastic. I mean, you see what a star she is, and I know what like an icon she is to you, David, but she just absolutely is. And she doesn't need them, but I would have loved some backing dancers with Brandy, like a full proper choreo moment instead of her going for it on her own.
Yeah, it is quite spaced out in that way. You know, we're focusing a lot on the graphics in this video, and she has like one or two so-called dancers here and there, sort of like male props. But I get what you mean. But, you know, there is a fantastic Top of the Pops performance. She did bring dancers over to the UK to do it, give you guys a little bit of a show.
Adam, I think we're about to have both a celebration and an education.
Yes.
Can you please tell us about your song and why you've chosen it today?
Okay, so I mentioned Jelena earlier, Jelena Karleuša. She's a Serbian-based pop star who I guess is most comparable to people like Gaga and Madonna, so much so that Jelena's actually been copied by quite a few times, rather by Gaga over the years. Ooh. She's also had her entire face stolen by Kim Kardashian, who also loves to rip off her looks. Everybody from J-Lo to drag queen Aquaria have either paid homage to Jelena or straight up swiped entire looks from her. She's basically that bitch, right? So she's also super, super controversial. And up until recently, she was a judge on the Serbian version of like The Voice or The X Factor, where the things that she would say to contestants would make even Simon Cowell cringe. Absolutely brutal. Like, Western pop viewers have no idea what the level of brutality that they do on the Serbian version of this show. Like, it's bigger than like when Dicko told
Paulini
about the gold dress. Paulini about the gold dress. Like, it's more full on than that. It's more insulting than that. So like, super, super controversial. But she's left that and she's focusing on still being an Instagram model for Pretty Young Thing and Hot Topic, I guess. But she's hasn't released any music since 2012, but she's been around for ages. And in 2002, she just completely ditched the traditional Serbian turbo folk that she'd been creating to swap it for more modern dance and pop beats. So this track, when I heard it, Još te volim, which is translated to I Still Love You. Još te volim, volim. It's like Jelena having like this manic episode, painting a picture of a woman so depressed and so hurt by heartache that she's just being told by everybody around her that she's crazy. And she's sort of saying in the breakdown, I'm not crazy, I still love you. You may recognize the backing track. In fact, if you listen to the album that this comes from, which is called For Your Eyes Only, four of its tracks take entire instrumental versions of four previous release tracks by Greek pop star Despina Vandi. Not just one song, she took four. Now, in the Balkans, very common practice to steal music from the Western market with no clearance or songwriting credits to anybody involved in the originals. That's actually how there's a Jelena track with a BB Rexha co-write, because Jelena was taken to court over it. So while I don't know if Jelena even got permission from Despina to use the music of four of her tracks, I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't.
Do you think Despina's like listening to this episode now is like, get my lawyers on the fucking
yes.
phone?
Like, she knows who her market is, and her market is mostly gay men.
And you give them what they want.
Exactly. I mean, this song is an absolute banger, and I mentioned earlier, sort of a totally new beginning for Jelena that opened doors for her creativity and deliver something more modern and exciting in the years that followed.
Amazing. So yeah, I'm glad you knew about the Greek origins, because my flatmate's Greek and he heard me listening to this song.
Did he?
And then he sent me a link to the Greek song, and I went, oh my God. And he was like, I think this, like, he thinks the Greek version was first. He's like, it's really famous it here. Mm-hmm. So then I sent it to Adam and I just was like, oh my God, I hope I'm not breaking his heart or anything.
Oh,
or
no.
Shattering your bubble.
I know all about Jelena's shady antics.
Of course you do. I should never have guessed it. But look, as we know, shady or not, our pop tracks do the rounds, especially in the 2000s. And if it works, why not get it out there? I mean, if people aren't getting the check, that's one thing. But if people are getting the check, let's get it out there and, you know, service these songs to other nations, other continents, because it's bops are bops for days. Now, me listening to it was giving me Eurovision
yes.
and Ibiza rave
yes.
via a Big Brother contestant in the best possible way. And also, there's that sound in it that sounds like the grinder sound.
Joel, that was in my notes too.
Oh my gosh, I never picked up on that.
Wasn't in my notes, sorry.
Thank you for that. And Ms. Eliza, I think it's time to put the needle on your very first 2002 spectacular suggestion.
Excellent. Well, yes, this is going to come as a surprise to absolutely nobody that I have picked Danielle Jane Minogue and her iconic Put the Needle on It as my first choice. You guys have obviously done a fabulous Danny episode covering this era. Adam and I have covered Neon Nights, so I'm preaching to the choir here. But
we love to preach here.
Yes, let's just, I was about to say have a circle jerk, but you can edit that out.
No, know, keep it in, please do.
I know your mum listens, Joel, so I don't want to upset her.
That so, grinder sound.
So, yes, Put the Needle on It, a song up until a year ago I legitimately thought was about listening to vinyl.
It's not?
Yeah. So it was released on November 4 in 2002 and was written by Danny, Corpion Blackcell and the legendary Karen Paul.
Oh, hello, Karen.
Love her. So this is actually where she got her big break with this song. So
really, Karen? Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because so when did Red Blooded Woman come out?
2003. So all four of us are big fans of Steve Anderson and his podcast. Yes. So one of the first episodes that he did last year was an interview with her, and she went over this whole story. So obviously, everyone go back and listen to that because you'll hear it properly from her, lest I butcher the facts. But high-level overview was that she hadn't written for or with another artist until this. In the interview, she talks about how she was about to be dropped by Universal, and one of the top guys there suggested that she go to Sweden because that's where it was all happening. She should go there to write. So she was a bit of a go-getter, and she just somehow found the number for, I think it's Merlin, is that the studios there?
Yeah.
Just called up. They were all like, how did you get this number? And then whoever she spoke to, pretty much whoever she spoke to there said, look, if you can fund yourself a trip here and get here, fine, come on in. And she was like, okay. So she had a great first week there. Corpy of Corpy and Blackcell walks into the room and says something along the lines of, our top liners just left for the day. Are you Karen Poole? Can you come and fill in because they're sick? They've gone home sick. And we've got Danny Minogue and we just need someone to come and fill in. And she was like, okay.
Say no more, it's Danny Minogue.
Pretty much.
Yeah. There'd already be a Joel Babington-shaped hole in the wall to get to the other room. Yeah.
Like a Looney Tunes just.
Yeah.
So off she ran and wrote Put the Needle on It. From that, you know, everyone was like, wait, who are you? She started getting more work. She obviously did more on Neon Nights. Went on to work with Kylie, but the break was Put the Needle on It. Oh, the music video.
Gorge.
Oh. I just really was mad for Danny's hair in this video. Like, it was so exciting when she got the spiky kind of mullet thing with the caramel highlights through it. I just thought, who is this woman?
She can do anything with her hair.
When you're blessed with like the structure of her face, it's like, right. It must be a hairdresser's dream that she could just be like, do whatever you want, darling. It's obviously going to look fabulous. Now, I loved in the music video when there's a, so obviously we see her draped across a vinyl that's spinning round, but then when there's a pole through the middle,
wow,
whoever came up with the idea to put the pole through the record should get a pay rise.
Mm-hmm. Just brilliant. My favorite part, I think, is when it looks like she's against tiles.
Oh yes, the bathroom tiles. Yes, because, yeah, and the hands come out.
Yeah,
dirty hands coming through.
Who doesn't put their playlist set to Put the Needle on It, get in the shower and just slam it? I mean, that's my shower routine.
It's all I want to do, darling.
So, and also when Adam and I did our Neon Nights episode. As always, I learn something new every time, especially when it comes to the Balkan area. And Adam let me know that there is a Turkish language version. I'll put the needle on it.
Stop it.
Yes. So I'm not going to try and pronounce it in Turkish. So in 2010, it was a singer, Adam, tell me if I pronounce it correctly, Merkan.
That's about right. Yeah, I think so. I have to look at the way, I can't remember how it was like written out.
So she released a cover version that translates to not your brother. So maybe not not Brendan. I'm not quite sure. Anyway, it's literally the same sort of, you know, musical background, but just in Turkish. The video is the same pixie haircut.
She even did the Danny hair?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
But she's in a car, kind of like how Madonna is in the music video. So it's kind
Fine.
It's mixing a lot of sort of references.
She's pulling from our favorite divas. You know, that was her mood board there. She's like, I want Danielle's hair. I want that limo from the music video. Yeah, this is going to be my moment. That's what she said. Who knew that this episode would be so international? Like, this is such a delightful turn in this, like, discovery that we're just unearthing. We are truly having a global moment here.
And what I loved is looking at clips from this era. It's that beautiful time in pop where you can be really sexy singing a song about SEX, dancing on a pole. You're on a pole on Top of the Pops, but then you're on some...
performance on Top of the Pops was incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. So good. And then you're off on some CBBC Blue Peter event to do a medley of your Neon Nights performance there. And it's just that golden, glorious era of it's... perfect for everyone.
It really was.
Miss Eliza Day, I wanted to ask, because you said you were in Europe/UK in 2002, were you here when this dropped? So did you feel the heat, the fever, if you will, of Danny Mania around this single?
I felt the fever and the heat around me at GAY when she was performing it, and I was surrounded by hundreds of sweaty, shirtless men.
Wow.
Truly dirty hands, I demand.
There were dirty hands all over me. There's no... Yeah, we happened to be in London that week and, you know, this was before social media, so it's not like you could log on to Twitter or something and gigs were promoted. I happened to run into someone I knew from back home who I didn't even know was in London, and he was like, how long are you here for? Because Danny's performing next weekend and we were supposed to leave. We obviously didn't because Danny was performing. So the stay was
changed
extended.
Changed the entire travel plans. We're staying for Danielle.
Basically, yes. So that was an incredible night.
Well, let's stick with you, Eliza, and let's talk about our first honourable mention of the day. Now, you have picked... I mean, watching it last night is one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Had you seen it before?
I'd never seen it before. Can you please tell us what it is?
Mariah Carey's MTV Cribs episode.
Oh, my God. AKA now where you're living from
For those of you playing along at home who can't see my Zoom background, I have made it Mariah Carey's New York City apartment. Lounge room, or this could be the Moroccan room. I'm not sure.
It's hard to tell. They're all so golden and honey colored. The whole house is just shades of gold.
Yeah, except the Hello Kitty bathroom.
Let's talk about the fact that she did declare the bathroom as her favorite room in the house and then proceeded to explain that she'd only used the shower once because there's, quote, too many knobs for me to figure out.
I mean, where to begin? I mean, I think the great thing about this as well is I think a lot of people took this seriously, as people do with Mariah, because they don't understand that she's actually extremely intelligent. Like, isn't her IQ off the charts? So if you get her humor, you get this.
Yeah, there are nuances to her humor and obviously also feeds into the myth of Mariah.
Yes.
She is larger than life. She is that diva.
Yes.
And also, like, I feel like she's one of those people that's so accomplished that if she wants a Hello Kitty bathroom, you go, yes, you deserve it. You go do that. You know, we're not going to look at it and be like, oh, you know, is that a bit much? No, it's not too much. It's just the right amount for Mariah.
Yeah, I love that she just gets in the bath with a towel and she's like, here's the area for my guests, because I guess she has guests while she's bathing. And then
to have a chat with someone in the bar.
Yes. But then it's like, let's go to the laundry, and she pulls her puppy out of the dryer.
That I had to stop, rewind, and watch that again because I couldn't believe
it. It's so good. And I love that, like, she's like, only one guest bedroom, because otherwise, you know, what was it? Something like, fools will stay too long. But it's the guest bedroom is called the Butterfly Fan Room, and it's fans can stay there. So next time you're in New York looking for a place to stay,
have a knock.
Just give Mariah a call. So, you know, and she's
I bet the Airbnb ratings must be like through the roof for that.
I mean, look, this whole pad, this New York penthouse apartment, is gorgeous in such like an early 2000s way. Like that very short time of, even in 2002, this felt very 2000, 2001.
Yes.
But in the best way, in that kind of like cream gold colour palette.
Yes.
This was a whole episode of Cribs dedicated to Mariah. You know, usually there's about three celeb Cribs in an episode, I believe, two or three. And Mariah had a whole episode to her. And it was fascinating. I would say the Butterfly guest room is the only room that I thought was ugly even for the time. Like, it's like 1997.
Right.
But maybe that was also purposeful so people don't stay.
Exactly. Oh, she's smart. There's a reason for everything. And I love that in her kitchen she has like a chaise, because she's like, I've got a rule that I don't sit up straight. I only lounge.
Oh, my God.
So that's
comedy gold, isn't she?
She's so brilliant. And then just, you know, on the Stairmaster in her stilettos.
Iconic. Oh, my God.
Her in her home gym is exactly what I would be like if I had a home gym. She references it in this episode, but about how she struggled like with the boards to get the apartment, which she goes into in her book. It was a real lengthy process. Like, it wasn't about, she obviously had the money to live there and it was her dream, but you have to get approval by all these silly people who just wasn't sure if it was the right move to have the MC move in there, which obviously it is. But yeah, it's just like pure elitism. When I was growing up, my mum was a cleaner, and it really reminded me of when I would go to work with her sometimes if I was ill from school or something like that. And this is how I would like act, like imagining my life in these fabulous houses and just sitting up there like, these are the most comfortable sofas ever, watching the big TV. And it was in that era of a lot of like people in Essex in the early 2000s loved the creams, loved the fashion, flashy. So it actually was quite familiar to me in a way.
Oh, I love it.
Chef's kiss, perfect choice, Eliza, of an honorable mention. Thank you very much. So we're going to take it back to me, and speaking of MTV around the world, I was actually introduced to this young artiste via MTV when I was on a holiday in Malta before she had her first release here. But we're going to take it to her second single. We're going to go a bit rocky, a bit grungy with Avril Lavigne, 2008 Two's Skater Boy. He was a boy, she was a girl. Can I make it any more obvious? He was a punk, she did ballet. What more can I say? He wanted her, she'd never tell. I chose this song because, wow, what a moment in time that this song encapsulates. And it was also a moment in time for me, as I thought Avril Lavigne was so fabulous that I'd never seen anyone quite like this before. And I convinced myself that I was going to be a grunger. Like, I thought that was my identity. And while I couldn't really ever get my hands on the aesthetic of it, really, to execute it well, I did used to rock out by trashing the living room to Kelly Osbourne and Avril Lavigne as a very angsty 10, 11-year-old. My mum did not know what she had on her hands, bless her, but I just had emotions and I had to let them out with Avril and Kelly and all the rock girls. Now, to me, this song as a 10, 11-year-old blew my mind, because it was the first song I kind of realised you could have narratives to. Did this do anything for you guys in Australia?
It was huge here. I was late to the party, though. I've made peace with it in recent years, but I can certainly enjoy it and definitely understand how important it was for pop at the time. But I definitely resonated a lot more with stuff that she released sort of in the years following. She was really pushed as this bratty kid by the media, especially here in Australia. And I think that it was that initially that kept me away from her and the song for so long. But it didn't take me long. I got on board for like I'm With You. So it wasn't long after. But if I have the option to skip Skater Boy for something like Girlfriend or What the Hell, I absolutely will.
Ah, it's so interesting that her discography has those like big banger moments. Yet I feel like Skater Boy continually gets referenced. Like it almost is like her wannabe, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a people have a love-hate relationship with it.
And I've got three hates and one love.
No. As in, it's like, it's the song that you like, you know, you might not like and it's not going to be on any of your playlists, but if you're like in the car or at a wedding or something, I don't know why it would come up on a wedding, but, you know, each to their own, you're going to rock out to it. Do you know what I mean? Like it's that song that even if you don't like it, it's, you know it so well and it might just remind you of like a good time or it reminds you of that year when things were simpler and so you will just rock out to it.
You're absolutely right, because I remember there was this sort of sports bar that we used to go to on a Thursday night here in Geelong called Eureka, and whenever they would play it, everyone would go fucking crazy over it, and it was just one of those songs. You're absolutely right. So
she was the Billie Eilish of this time, like, you know, that teen star that would get the Billboard kudos, as in Billboard magazine, but also like, you know, really resonate with smash hits readers. Like, not that Billie Eilish is smash hits readers. We don't have smash hits anymore. It's such a shame. But, you know, the dead moody teens were like feeling it.
Well, she was. I've got in my notes that she was like a pioneer. Like, all jokes aside, you know. You know, this was sort of the start of something.
Yeah, she was the absolute. She was the first rock girl. Like, and to me, it's like, I'll always see Hillary and Ashley and Kelly are like my favorites of Kelly Clarkson of that are my favorites of that. But it's funny because even in my mind, well, Avril's like the rock girl and then these girls are pop rock.
Did you see her on the Kelly Clarkson show really, where she talks about how difficult it was to just push this album in that direction? Like the songwriters and producers that she was being put with kept wanting to go for a softer sound or more pop. And she was like, no, it needs to be harder. Like, and then just seeing the results and what impact it made, especially in this debut album era, you're like, it was so worth it because there was no one else doing it. And then she came out with it and put her, you know, mark on the industry.
Mm. So my huge pop culture moment for this is actually yet to come. For the 20th anniversary of this film, Avril Lavigne is making a feature film adaptation of the Skater Boy song. And Avril, I just want you to know, I mean, it might already be in the edit, but like I'm available. Like
Joel's been learning to skate. Yeah.
I could be the skater boy. I could be the skater girl. I could be the ballerina girl. I could be the parents. You could write in some kind of gay uncle. I'm here, Avril, ready to available. Now, in terms of honourable mentions, we're going to stick with me for a moment and stay attuned to MTV because I want to bring up a Ms. Sarah Michelle Gellar presenting and hosting the MTV Movie Awards in 2002. She was co-hosting with Jack Black, but it is Ms. SMG that we are celebrating today. Now, I wanted to bring this up because I just wanted to remind everyone what a priority artiste she is. And now that is just actress, A-list celebrity, however you want to take that in. She was really well received for hosting this. It featured like music numbers. It featured obviously hosting. It had sketches and film parodies in. When you watch back now, it is filled with like early 2000s sexual jokes. Yeah. If you take that out.
Yeah, it is. I remember all the skits.
Yeah.
All the movie skits. That was the biggest one that I sort of remember because I was never a fan of Jack Black and still am not. But I was obviously there for the vampire slaying goddess that is SMG.
This just showed how many lost careers we had of SMG. Like there's this big musical opening number, which she is flawless in. I mean, we need musicals. We need Broadway. She did say she was going to release a Dido-inspired album in the early 2000s, which never came into fruition, but we could have had it. And this number also features the gorgeous Brittany Murphy, who is absolutely fabulous, and we know what a great vocalist she is. Some other amazing awards and moments of the night. Kelly Osbourne debuted as a rock star. Initial performance of Papa Don't Preach. Mandy Moore won breakthrough female for her role in A Walk to Remember, which she won over Britney Jean Spears and Anne Hathaway. Anne Hathaway for Princess Diaries, a film that Mandy Moore did have a smaller role in.
Is that this year?
And it was just, all 2002. I mean, some of them may have been out in 2001 and been ready for 2002's award seasons. But I mean, what a winner to win. And Mandy is just this graceful feature film star that she is, you know, bringing a bit of class and elegance and old Hollywood to 2002 teen superstar. And to bring it back to the This Is Disco world, Kylie was nominated for Best Cameo for her part in Moulin Rouge.
Oh, of course.
But she lost to Snoop Dogg for his part in Training Day.
But for his part in the Just Eat commercials.
But I just wanted to touch base on what sort of a pop culture moment this was and encapsulated all what was going on in 2002 and partly freaks me out when we realise it was 20 years ago.
It does.
But hey-ho, justice for SMG, justice for Mandy Moore. Can't wait to see more projects from those queens. Anyway, I'm going to hand over to my fabulous co-host, who is the king of Symphony of Life. Davo, please tell us your song choice and why you've chosen it.
So, you know what? Having two iconic Aussies on here with us, Joel, I had to obviously pick an Aussie artist. And I feel like both of you would appreciate Tina Arena. And I'm just dying to talk about her. And, you know, there never seems to be like a right moment or right back at you to do it until now.
Excellent.
So we are celebrating Symphony of Life. Guys, you were there with me in Australia when this happened. This was, of course, part of Tina Arena's comeback album, Just Me. I know Tina Arena as the balladeer, but then when she came back in this era with Soulmate Number 9 and it was such a like fun bop, I was like, okay, this feels like more me. But you know, the first two singles, Soulmate Number 9 and Day to Be Happy, didn't really do it, did they?
No,
no, was, I don't think so.
As soon as the album came out, it was all about Symphony of Life for everybody. Everybody was talking about the song. It was just sort of a given that it was going to be a single. And thank God, because up until Tina released Karma in 2018, this was my all-time favorite Queen Arena song ever.
Oh, my God.
When I only got to see Tina live for the first time a few years ago, I remember she came out onto the stage, she opened her mouth, and I started crying and didn't stop for the whole show. Like, it was just so overwhelming hearing that voice live and seeing it for the first time. And that song, just incredible. One of the most beautifully crafted pop songs of all time, and should have been as big as something like Madonna's Frozen. There were also some really, really good Metro remixes that were used for the song's single release, but I'm such a sucker for extended mixes, it's definitely the Metro 12-inch mix that I loved the most. That was only ever released on vinyl, but thankfully I found it one day at a record shop on Greville Street for $4.
Oh my God. Best money spent ever. Yeah, because totally. I was going to say, like, fans of the kind of gentle dance pop remixes, go to Metro for those remixes. Mm. And it really, like, is true to the DNA of this song.
Most of my Tina favourite stuff is 90s because I'm old. So, and you know, I Need Your Body and that kind of stuff.
I Need Your Body is banger, my favorite.
Joel is obsessed with I Need Your Body. Like, it's just, you can't even imagine it's the same artist, but thank God that's in her discography. But I love this track in that way that it's a gentle dance pop song. You know, like we were saying, like Madonna's Frozen, it does have that kind of vibe to it. And also, like, did you love the music video? It was like slightly a nod to that as well.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
Tina dancing in a desert, veils. It's like kind of the kids' TV version of Frozen. I enjoyed that.
It's a very interesting music video, isn't it? It's part like adult, dead arty. And then it's also part like pantomime Teletubbies Butlin's green screen.
Don't disrespect our queen now.
That's not, how is that a disrespect? You know, the Teletubbies did what they needed to do, and avant-garde anything is high praise. Right, guys, get the popcorn ready. We are off to a couple of cinematic events with the Queen of Pop. Adam, I'm not going to introduce it. Go for it. What have you picked for us?
Well, I have picked Madonna's Die Another Day. I first heard Die Another Day as a radio premiere while driving my VL Holden Commodore through the streets of Geelong.
Mask.
And actually screaming my head off. Yeah, totally. Another Day, it just really was just this bonkers pop moment that I don't think anyone saw coming. The expectations of Madonna doing a Bond theme were one thing entirely, but what we got was so much more magical and interesting than many of the Bond themes before it or after it, to be honest. Madonna and Mireille literally came along, tore the absolute shit out of a sweeping Bond-esque string section and spliced it together with sharp electronica, quite literally creating an entirely new, never-before-heard sound. It was avant-garde, it was completely off-kilter, and one of the many examples as to why I think Madonna is a proper genius, whether it's in the music itself or the people she decides to work with, especially at this point when she was pushing her sound and experimenting more and more alongside Mireille. Even like the remixes for this single were just A+. Felix the House Cat, Brother Brown, and the ball-tearingly brilliant Thunderpuss remix. Pure, pure gold. One of Madonna's greatest singles.
Greatest singles, wow. You know, Adam, I just remember when this came out, it just being so divisive. Like people either, I really appreciated it because I always thought, look, somebody needs to switch up the Bond theme kind of routine. Like it was getting boring. But when I heard Die Another Day for the first time, I was like, is this too far? Has she gone too far with this one? Like, are people going to get it? But I was there for it. I love the production.
Yeah, I would say it's like not since A View to a Kill as a Bond theme been so fun. And you're right. Like, are they the only two ones that are not following suit of what you expect of a Bond theme? And like, I watched today, like the opening of Bond using that song. And it's just like, here we go. This makes it this situation so much more interesting.
Yeah. Mm.
And what I love is watching the music video and the song. It feels like there's an assignment given and it's expected to go one way, like stereotypically done one way. And this is what Madonna has done with it.
Well, talking about the movie and the video clips, so 2002 really was a very, very formative year for me in a lot of ways. I just turned 19 and was working Saturday nights at Lyric Nightclub in Geelong. I got a job there the day after my 18th birthday. But in 2002, that was really when I just started getting myself reacquainted with the Melbourne rave scene. And I'd made this really great group of friends in Geelong, some of who actually worked with me at Lyric and others who were just sort of weekly visitors to the club. And they all loved hard trance and techno just as much as I do. So we began making pilgrimages to rave clubs in Melbourne each Friday night, like Bass Station or Hard Candy. So Fridays was the night in Melbourne rave every weekend. And so all of these guys and the group of friends was pretty much only blokes, all straight except for me, super, super accepting and were, I guess, actual allies long before I even understood what that meant or that it even existed. They loved how passionate I was about dance music and were thankfully also into what Madonna brought to the table commercially. I remember one particular Friday night, we were going to go do the usual and my friend Anthony would come pick me up from my place, we'd pick up another mate and then sort of drive to Altona, which is sort of a few suburbs before Melbourne CBD for those listening who have no idea what I'm talking about. Our final pickup was in Altona before making our way onto Chapel Street for Bass Station at Chase's nightclub.
My skin crawled there. The regrets and like just trashiness. Not that you're trashy, obviously, Adam, but we all have our phases.
No, definitely, definitely. So we were there every Friday without fail, but there was a small problem because the Diner of the Day track had just been released and the video was dropping on the tail end of an MTV Behind the Video special that was airing that night.
Uh-oh.
So as timing would have it, when we arrived at our friend Mark's place in Altona, I made all four of those straight men sit down, watch the entire making of the video, and then the video itself before we could go anywhere. We missed a DJ that we all wanted to see play as well, but it was absolutely worth it. The real kicker, though, is that all of this went down even though I was recording the special onto the DVD, onto the DVR at home, which they also knew about, mind you. Listen, there was no way I was going out clubbing without seeing that fucking video. The blood runs deep for Madonna. I mean... I literally told Ben at a Robin gig once that if Madonna's Hard Candy leaked while Robin was performing, we would all be leaving her show so I could go home to download it. Everyone in my car knew that night that there was a very, very high chance that this might have happened. The boys that I was talking to about, they all wanted to go see the film, and I had never seen a single Bond movie in my entire life at that point. So I went purely for Madonna. And like that cameo I knew was... very, very short, tiny little appearance, and I had a plan. So as soon as it basically, as she had begun, she was gone, which was also my cue to follow suit. So I got up, asked Anthony for his keys, and went back to the car to smoke cigarettes until I'd finished the movie. I got what I came there for. There was no need whatsoever for me to stick around to see the rest.
Hey, you could just, I'll just imagine you then for like another hour. Oh, that was fantastic.
Literally.
Just replaying that scene.
Replaying those 2 minutes.
American Life is my favorite album.
American Life and Like a Prayer tied for me. My favorite Madonna albums, Like a Prayer, the Divorce album, the big comeback, what I regard as the first really, really big pop comeback, which was Like a Prayer coming back from Sean Penn from the True Blue era. And then American Life was her kind of having like a midlife crisis on record. And I think they were both really, really important in sort of where she took things following that, because it was sort of looked down upon, and the American Life single stuffed everything up for her because of the political stance. But the sounds on that album, and especially songs like Die Another Day and American Life, very influential.
Masterpieces. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moe did such a great job with her. It's just like that marriage of like really hard electronica and techno with like the softness of acoustic guitars, like, you know, that juxtaposition, I've not heard anyone really do it to that level, and definitely the first time I've heard it done that way.
So speaking of marriages, divorces, cinematic events, Adam, we're going to stick with you. Please let us know your honourable mention for the episode.
All right, I'll try and keep it brief because that's truly all this movie deserves, but... Let's just say that Swept Away remains Guy Ritchie's only good movie, and that is not saying much.
Wow.
Adam Eve has chosen chaos today. I'm right back at you, everyone.
I think he's a terrible movie maker. Anyway, I was at uni a few years later, and for my film studies movie of choice for a particular assignment, I picked Swept Away.
Oh, my God.
And I was particularly obsessed with how badly amazing and terrible it was. And when the assignment to write multiple thousands of words on the mise-en-scene of the first 5 minutes of the film, I naturally picked Swept Away, which was a choice my lecturer said he'd never in a million years expected that he'd ever be reading an assignment on that movie, commended me on my truly unique and bizarre choice, and gave me a high distinction for the assignment.
Oh, yes. My God.
Well done.
Deserved.
The scene where Madonna lip syncs to Della Reese's Come On In My House alone makes the movie worth seeing. And there was also this really great extra on the DVD where Madonna and Guy interview each other about the making of the movie, which was super, super fun, very funny. And I remember one reviewer at the time saying the 15-minute featurette on the DVD was more enjoyable than the entire movie itself.
Oh, my gosh.
There's also a Goldfrapp connection.
Okay.
I got Shazam out right away when that happened, but you go for it, Adam.
Yes, yes. So there's a Goldfrapp track on the Swept Away soundtrack. And so allegedly the story goes that Madonna invited the Goldfrapp duo over to her and Guy Ritchie's house in London to watch some footage from Swept Away, as they wanted to use Lovely Head in the film's intro.
Allison's, and they thought that was the best thing to do.
Well, Allison said that she was very starstruck and couldn't believe that she was at Madonna's house, but that it was also very uncomfortable because the movie was, quote, clearly going to suck.
Yikes.
So I think they just sort of let them have the song because I think they might have felt bad for them that the movie looked terrible.
Oh my god!
But like, I mean, I think it was like who? It's what's her name? Elizabeth Banks is in this.
Elizabeth Banks is in this,
and Jean Triplehorn. Like, it's just bonkers.
Yeah. So I want to know, right, Adam? So I love pop star movies, like in a way that they're not guilty pleasures for me. Like, I genuinely love them. Like, Crossroads from Justin to Kelly, Glitter. Like, they bring me so much joy. Like, I will defend them. Mm-hmm. And I think they have merit and people have seen them the wrong way. Like, I think there's genuinely great aspects to those films. So I've always been curious to see this. I've been recovering from COVID this week. That was the perfect time to watch it. I was really out of it. I had no idea what was going on. I think I'd still have no idea what was going on if I watched it in the state I'm in now.
I watch it sort of like with a bit of a laugh. I find it funnier. I find the Madonna character extremely hilarious.
Do you feel like she's playing a version of herself or?
Yes.
I think it's like a caricature of herself.
I see what she was trying to do, and I feel like she was poorly directed in this film.
Well,
she was giving what on stage would have been a good performance. She was giving quite a Shakespearean performance in a way, but just did not translate to this film. And then especially when you know her as Madonna, she's playing this sort of like rich, entitled, demanding woman, and you can't just not see Madonna. And she does do it fantastically in a way. But I even that coming out, my word mouth is being too kind to this film.
Totally, totally.
So, yeah, I do feel like this film kind of is like Mummy Dearest on a desert island.
Yes. Oh, my God. Totally. That is such a good way to
put it.
Now, and that's the kind of character she plays. Yeah. And again, that is Faye Dunaway's doing something really big that needed to be pulled back a little bit for film.
It's a remake of an old movie, an old Italian movie from 1974, which quite tellingly, Guy said is one of his favourite movies of all time.
Oh.
And apparently that the scene where she's abused is like a lot more full on in the original as well.
Oh my God. The star's son of the original plays the love interest in this film.
That's right.
Which is kind of interesting. And the writer-director, she was invited to sort of like a private screening of it. And she said, what have you done to my movie? Which you would do.
Yeah, so anyway, terrible, terrible movie. Can't get enough of it.
Let's move on to our grand finale of the episode. And what a moment to end on. When This Is Disco popped up into my life, it was love at first sight, and I want to take it to you, Ms. Eliza Day. Please introduce us to your final choice of today.
Well, once again, I am being highly predictable and choosing Kylie Ann Minogue's Grammy-nominated song, Love at First Sight. Between Danny doing Neon Nights, Kylie doing Fever, like these were the glory Minogue years, these early 2000s. We were so blessed. So this is my second favourite Kylie song of all time.
And the first Love at First Sight is number one?
No, my first one is Confide in Me.
Oh, okay. Edge choice. We like it. We love the range.
So this was the third single from Fever after Can't Get You Out of My Head and In Your Eyes, but the second single in America.
Well, it got that Grammy nom, so.
Well, exactly. So, and this then went on, she had like Grammy nominations every year for the next like 4 years for Come Into My World. What was the other one? Slow and I Believe in You. So she was just nominated.
Once you're on the radar, yeah. I know. Every time that category comes up, they just hit refresh and see what Miss Kylie Ann's been doing.
Exactly.
It's the Kylie Ann category now. So in terms of in your world tour, of this time in 2002, do you remember hearing this song sort of for the first time or when it came out?
I didn't leave for Europe until July and it was released on my birthday on June 3rd. Thank you, Kylie. That was an amazing gift.
Happy birthday.
So very excited by that. But yeah, it was everywhere in Europe. Like my biggest memory is getting one of those sort of cruise ships between Stockholm and Helsinki. It was like an overnight thing. For whatever reason, there was a disco on this boat. And I remember being in that disco somewhere in Scandinavian waters, dancing to Love at First Sight. Like, that is my fondest memory from that time. Amazing.
I always think, like, when we talk about this stuff from 20 years ago, it's like, imagine if you could tell yourself then, like, in 20 years, you'll be doing a podcast, like, really dissecting and celebrating this stuff. You'd be like, first of all, what's a podcast? But it's like such joy to know that, like, all these pure moments are then, like, being kind of recorded forever.
Yeah.
Did you feel coming to, I mean, kind of the perfect time as a Kylie and Danny fan to be coming to the UK? Could you feel that they are arguably more celebrated in the UK and Europe, especially in this time, than they were at home? Or am I got the wrong end of the stick there?
At this time, I think it was probably a bit equal.
I think it sort of balance sort of went up and down through certain dips through both of their careers. But especially for Danny, it was the 90s were sort of when that tall poppy thing came into effect.
Yeah.
But when sort of Put the Needle On It came along and Who Do You Love Now and everything, that sort of started creating this cooler image of Danny as this ultimate club queen, and that sort of took off after that. But yeah, it's sort of been up and down, I would say. But around this time, it would have been pretty equal.
Even America, which is not usually a strong Minogue market.
Which I find really interesting because, like, the one distinct memory I have of Love at First Sight was actually the feeling that she's cracking America with this.
Yeah.
I feel like there was like a TRL or some sort of, there was a performance by a pool, definitely. And she's in cargo trousers and a side pony, perhaps.
Yeah, she did a lot of stuff in America. I saw her at Madison Square Garden in December of that year.
Wow.
I had missed the Fever tour because I think it had come to Australia and I'd already left. By pure chance, we were in New York sort of for the 2 weeks sort of leading up to Christmas, and she was doing one of those big Christmas radio shows that, you know, a lot of artists do at that time. So she did a set. She did Love at First Sight. I saw Love at First Sight performed at Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
At a show that was hosted by Britney.
What?
Oh, my God.
Britney was the host. She didn't perform. She was the host. It also had, like, Ray Charles, Luther Vandross, Gloria Gaynor, Liza Minnelli singing New York, New York. Anastasia, Ashanti.
That is amazing. That sounds like the most beautiful fever dream ever.
It was. You know, at the end of the day, you're in America, and whilst this song was big, Can't Get You Out of My Head had been quite big, people still didn't know a lot of Kylie stuff. So when she came on and I'm sitting, like, I wasn't on the floor or anything, I was somewhere in the stands, obviously I stood up and went berserk for her whole set alone in my session.
We've all been there for one gig or another. We've all been there and doing that for our fame.
It was incredible to see her in New York at that venue as well.
I was just going to say, can we also quickly mention the fact that the B-side of this was the highly sought-after Blue Monday bootleg with Can't Get You Out of My Head, which was just, my God, after that performance, I remember radio stations here in Australia clamoring to make their own version of it because there wasn't an official version of it yet, and they were hammering their own versions until this official version came along. It was huge. Wow. The single was huge. I remember hearing Love at First Sight and Can't Get Blue Monday Out of My Head about four or five times a night at Lyric Nightclub when I was working there in Geelong on a Saturday night. And every time everybody would scream. Just
amazing.
It just was such a huge dance floor bomb, both of those tracks, every time.
You're dealing with Biffco. You can't really go wrong when you get that team involved. So, you know, we were speaking earlier about Steve Anderson's podcast. He's also interviewed Biff. He does talk about, you know, Love at First Sight and says it's his the most favourite song he's ever done.
Oh.
Which for a guy who gave us the entire Spice Girls discography is, you know, is a huge
high praise.
Yeah. So he said he didn't have much to say about it, and obviously go back and listen to the episode, but he said it was around the time that when they were writing that particular session, it was around the time that Daft Punk's Discovery had just been released. And so they'd spent 2 days listening to that before they sort of then started writing. So, it had that kind of influence. He was trying to figure out how did Daft Punk do what they did, and then that's come about.
And bring it into Kylie's world. Because, yeah, now that you mentioned Daft Punk, yeah, the intro, the opening bars, it's so like something from that world,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's yeah. Totally French house.
Yeah. And he said in that interview as well that apparently the label didn't like Love at First Sight.
Well,
it was not Love at First Sight.
Outrageous.
Y2 Kylie is still going strong. It's David's term. I hope you don't mind me borrowing that, Davo. She's still going strong with this fabulous music video that she gives us in this era. I mean, it's got this amazing, it looks like it's sort of a one-shot continuous video, isn't it? It's sort of
I think it was filmed in one shot.
Amazing.
Well, what were they doing for the whole 2 days? Rehearsals and stuff to get it.
Got to get that green eyeshadow perfect.
Right. That eyeshadow is amazing. It's like this minty green, aquary blue. Like that is gorgeous. Yeah. That's my number one takeaway from the video. But everything's fantastic. So that shows how good that eyeshadow is. Yeah.
Very signature. You know, you think of this time with blue eyeshadows. You have Kelly Rowland's Dilemma. You have Sophie Ellis Bextor in Get Over You. Like it was a time for blue eyeshadow. Shadow of that aqua kind of tone.
It's just the epitome of early 2000s fashion, cargo pants.
I really wanted to shout out the styling because it looks very simple, right? It looks like it's thrown together. But when you freeze frame this video, the details of the orange bangle connects with like the lanyard that she's wearing. Like, it looks like a festival lanyard, you know, Kylie in the VIP section.
Yeah.
and I think her G-string is also orange.
Yes, it is.
So I was like, guys, there is like layers to this. And obviously the blue of the eyeshadow is a complementary color of orange. So it looks simple, but actually there's a reason why it's so visually appealing.
It's a shame. If that was released today, she'd be selling those orange G-strings on her website.
Well, this was the year that she had her Love Kylie lingerie. So,
Yes, of course. Very prominent. Yeah.
So all the photos for that were done by Nick Knight. And all the sort of outtakes were then used for the artwork for Love at First Sight.
Ah,
is that
clever.
Where it's from and why it looks so sexy? Yes. Wow. I always wonder where that shoot was from because I hadn't seen those from the album booklet and her hair looked a little bit different. I mean, it looked like, she's just being sexy in a sauna. That was a kind of smokiness to the artwork.
Yes.
David Lim's biopic. I loved as well in the music video that she had this fabulous K earring. And that's following on from the year before we had Sophie Monk with the dollar S earring in the I Need Somebody music video. So I need both of those, one on each ear. Right. I don't even have my ears pierced, but I need them.
I was working in fashion retail at the time and whatever I could replicate. Like I remember having they were a pair of earrings, but one was a stud and the other one was this like beautiful, like dangly, thing. And anytime I could get an initial so that I could have my version of a K. And then for whatever reason, our Christmas party must have been come as your favorite pop star or come as it was fancy dress. I don't know
Amazing.
Why. I went for this whole look. I had yellow stilettos. I literally went to Sports Girl, which is, I guess, sort of like Topshop. And I bought a big chunky orange bangle and I got my Sharpie and wrote K. Like I put all the attention to detail on my outfit for that particular look. So
I hope your workmates appreciated the reference and where it came from.
They had no idea.
I loved doing Kylie Light Years on here because like Spinning Around was so huge and all those songs were huge. So I did love them, but I didn't come on as a stan. So I loved when we get to do Kylie now, because we will continue the journey, that it is sort of me as a pop fan taking it in. So we have David's like fandom side and then me kind of, it's more of a newer discovery.
Yeah.
And then that's why I love listening to you guys' podcast, because regardless if I was a fan or not, I've always had such huge respect for the Minogues. I think they're both fantastic pop stars. And I was kind of a bigger fan of Danny, but like I always thought they were grade A pop stars. I just wasn't necessarily like a stan and wasn't off book. So that's why I love when you guys dive in with each episode. Some I know more than others, but it's both for me a celebration and an education. So regardless of what you are on the Minogue fandom scale, guys, make sure you are checking out This Is Disco. Wow, guys, what a treat. Firstly, thank you so much for coming on and being our dream first guest for this kind of new guest format that we're doing. Can you please remind our lovely listeners what your podcast and podcasts are, where they can find them, where they can follow you, and they must check it out.
You can follow This Is Disco at This Is Disco on Twitter and Instagram. And I'm at Ms. Eliza Day on Twitter and Instagram. Adam?
And you can catch my fortnightly radio show on Mixcloud, The Record Doctor, at The Record Doctor, and on both Twitter and Instagram, at Aloud Podcast for the Girls Aloud Podcast. You can't mistake their anthology. And Adam Eve, ADEM.EVE on Instagram, minus the dot on Twitter.
Fabulous. All right, guys, thank you so much. You have been listening to Right Back At You, the 2000s pop music podcast. You can follow us at Right Back Pod on all social platforms. You can email our hearts, rightbackpod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Dr_Joel B. And you can follow David at...
Lovely Me. And I just want to say thank you guys so much for coming on. Like, it just, it's such a dream to talk to both of you, see you face to face virtually together. So yeah, this is an Aussie special. This is another Aussie special for Right Back At You.
Thank you so much for having us. It's been such an honor for us to come on. We love the podcast so much, and love you too to death. So
this is a thrill.
No-brainer that we say yes.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And obviously their handles and everything, if you missed it, are in the notes of the episode, so check that out. Until next time, guys, bye.
Bye.